Good evening and welcome to tonight's monthly teleconference entitled, Dealing with the Emotional and Mental Aspects of MS. All lines are currently in a listen-only mode. During the presentation, we will conduct several question-and-answer sessions. If you would like to ask a question, press the number 1 on your touch-tone keypad. Please try to ask questions that are general in nature and that might appeal to the larger group. Once your question is asked, your line will be remuted. Questions will be taken in the order that they are received. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Piper Reynolds, Senior Manager of Outreach and Education for the National MS Society, Greater Northwest Chapter. Piper, you may begin.
Okay, thank you, Alma, and I would just like to thank everyone for joining our monthly teleconference this evening. We have a wonderful program in store for you. We're joined today by one of the leading experts in the field of pain management and depression in MS, Dr. Dawn Eady. Dr. Eady is a clinical psychologist and the professor in the Department of Rehabilitation Medicine at the University of Washington. She has conducted studies on the treatment of pain and depression in persons living with MS. And these studies have revealed that many people with MS are eager to learn additional ways in managing their pain, mood, and fatigue, but are often unable to access such care. So she'll discuss many of these things this evening. And following the teleconference, you'll receive a program evaluation, which we urge you to complete as your feedback and ideas help us to improve our programs and services and provide you with the most helpful and pertinent information and support. Finally, we encourage you to consider registering for future monthly teleconferences, which are always held on the first Thursday of every month from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time with alternating topics and speakers. Visit us online at msnorthwest.org or call 1-800-344-4867 to find out more about our upcoming monthly teleconferences. On that note, I'd like to thank you all again for being on the call this evening, and I'll pass the floor off to Dr. Eady.
Good evening, everybody. I'm delighted to be here. I'm also delighted to be partnering with the Greater Northwest Chapter of the National MS Society. I'm excited to share information with you because some of the information I'm going to be sharing with you this evening is based on some very recent and promising research in the treatment of many of the problems that go along with MS that include your mood and your emotions and also pain. I'll also be talking about some strategies that are kind of tried and true that we know have been helpful for people who have MS. First, what I'm going to do, though, before I start talking about some strategies or things to do to improve your mood and emotions after MS, I want to first just give a little bit of an overview about some of the most common challenges that people with MS have in the realm of emotions and stress and things like that. So now, first of all, when I talk about mood or emotions, you might wonder, you know, what is normal in MS? Because certainly living with MS is not a normal thing for most people. So I want to talk about what the idea of normal mood is. You know, first of all, it's very normal, it's very healthy, and it's very understandable to have ups and downs when you're living with a condition like MS. And there's really no right way to react to MS and its effects on your life. And what I know from working with many people with MS is, you know, people have really different reactions to it. And certainly it's very normal to have times when you're really managing it well and feel like you can deal with it, and other times when it feels pretty stressful to have MS. Certainly, because it's pretty normal to have a variety of changes, that doesn't mean that you might not want to do some things to improve your emotional well-being, and which also can affect your physical well-being. So one of the first things I want to talk about is just some of the different common emotions in a little more specifics. You know, first of all, it's very normal to have some anxiety or stress when you're dealing with the unpredictability and challenges that can come with living with MS. And many people I've talked to talk about that, how it can, you know, it can cause some anxiety and some stress. And that is something that the techniques I'll be talking about later tonight can help you with. It's also very normal to sometimes feel a little discouraged or down or blue. And in fact, I'll be talking a bit more about what depression is in just a few moments. I also like to point out, however, that in addition to anxiety or stress or feeling depressed or down, many people actually thrive in the face of living with MS, and many people can be quite resilient. In fact, we know that about half of people with MS actually maybe have normal ups and downs, but actually do really well with it, meaning that they're able to do things they want to do, and they're able to, you know, feel happy and content with life despite the presence of the challenges of MS. Now, I do want to focus for just a moment on depression, and I want to focus on that because, as you probably, many of you know, depression is more common in people with MS than it is in the general population, or even more common than in other medical populations. There are different names given for depression. Sometimes it's just called depression. Sometimes people refer to it as clinical depression or a depressive disorder or a major depression. I want to describe just briefly what depression looks like. When I'm talking about depression tonight, I'm not referring just to feeling down or blue. I'm actually talking about a constellation of symptoms that constitute what we might call a clinical depression or a major depression, that is, where the symptoms are significant enough that they really get in the way of your life. And so some of these symptoms include feeling down or depressed most of the day, nearly every day, really lacking interest in or losing the ability to feel pleasure when you're doing things that used to bring you joy or used to be interested in. When people have a full clinical or major depression, they often have changes in their appetite or weight. It can be both a weight gain or a weight loss, and problems with sleep. Fatigue is also common, and obviously fatigue is not just a symptom of depression. It also can come with having MS, but usually in people who are depressed, the fatigue is more pronounced than it would be if they weren't depressed. Sometimes people even have difficulties feeling guilty or worthless when they're depressed, and then also difficulties with making decisions or concentrating. Now, these symptoms may indicate the presence of depression, especially if you experience, you know, a number of these symptoms most of the day, nearly every day. There are a number of ways that you can treat depression, and I'll be talking about that a little later on. But if you're really uncertain, if you feel like you've been having these kinds of depressive symptoms and they're making it hard for you to do what you want to do, really bringing you down in terms of enjoying life, I think it might be worth talking to your healthcare provider. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about what to do about it a little bit later on. Now, why am I talking more specifically about depression? I just want to really call your attention to it because, as I said, it is more common in people with MS. Depression, if you were to survey, studies have shown if you survey people, about 16% of people in the last year who have MS have also had a depressive disorder, whereas in the general population, it's about 7%. So it's almost or about two times more common in people with MS. And many people have depressive symptoms, maybe not a full depressive disorder, but about 40 to 50% of people with MS can have what we call subclinical or kind of mild symptoms of depression and stress. Now, what do we know about depression? Well, we know that some of the brain changes that go along with having MS might also put a person at risk for having depression. We also know that sometimes some of the treatments for MS can impact mood, and certainly having other physical problems can affect a person's mood. The stressors that can come with having MS, such as maybe if you're unemployed or not able to work or having financial or physical or cognitive problems, those things can also contribute to depression, as can pain. And chronic pain is very common in people with MS, unfortunately. So pain has also been known to contribute to depression. Now, you might wonder, you know, why am I spending so much time on this? I want to just really point out that it's very important to treat depression. We know that depression has an adverse impact on people with MS. We know that when people are depressed and have MS, it really disrupts their life. It disrupts their health. Studies have shown it might be associated with poor control of their MS or disease progression. And we also know that it can affect your cognition or your thinking skills, things like memory and concentration. The other challenge about MS is that even though most MS providers know that depression is common in MS, it's often undertreated. And there have been several studies that have shown that even in people getting care in MS clinics by MS specialists, about 60% of those who have MS and depression do not receive treatment for their depression. And so I want to call this to your attention because sometimes you have to really advocate for yourself if you're depressed to get help and to get some care. In a couple minutes, we're going to have our first question and answers, but let me just talk for a couple more minutes about what we know about the treatment of depression. Now, the best way to treat depression is to really target it through multiple ways. Certainly, antidepressant medications can be really helpful. Not everybody responds to antidepressants, but many people do, and sometimes it takes more than one antidepressant to find one that works for you. But I'd encourage you to talk with your doctor if you're feeling depressed. We also know that different types of counseling or psychotherapy can be helpful for people with depression. In fact, there have been a few really nice studies that have shown that a certain type of therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy can be very useful for treating depression in people who have MS. Other ways that I'll get into more in this conference call is something called behavioral activation, or that has to do with becoming more active and exercising. We also know that exercise is also an effective treatment for depression, and I'll talk a bit more after the break about how do you exercise in the context of MS. And certainly having other support, things like support from friends or family, attending support groups, all these things can be helpful when you're faced with depression. So with that, what I'd like to do in just a moment is go to our question and answers. And after the question and answers, I'll talk to you more about kind of what do you do about depression as well as some of the other symptoms that can go along with having MS. So I think I'm ready for the Q&A.
If you would like to ask a question, press the number 1 on your touch-tone keypad. Once your question is asked, your line will be remuted. We have one people ready to ask a question. Our first question comes from Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. I was wondering, I actually have worked in mental health in the past administratively, but I was wondering, do you think it is beneficial when seeking a therapist that they be someone who either works exclusively with clients through an MS center because I see the needs of people who have MS as being different than the general population. So I guess my question is, do you think it's important to see a person who specializes in treating clientele that have MS? Because the last thing I want to do if I go in for therapy is have to educate the practitioner on what this whole disease process is and how that may impact my mood, emotion, and thinking. Do you understand my question, or is that?
Yes, I do. So, Mark, that's a great question. And, you know, I think in ideal circumstances, I would recommend that people who are seeking help see somebody who has at least some expertise in MS. Now, unfortunately, sometimes that can be hard to find. And so I think if you can't find somebody who has worked with people with MS, kind of the next best thing would be to find someone who at least has worked with people with other neurologic or medical conditions. And one way to find that type of person would be to talk to your MS specialist. And now if that doesn't work, I still think it'd be better to at least try to see somebody, you know, maybe a really highly skilled therapist or counselor, and they should be, you know, ethically they should know that they need to maybe seek consultation themselves by trying to find experts who can help them understand MS. And certainly that's one thing we do within our university MS center is we sometimes serve as consultants to people who don't have as much experience treating MS as we do. But ideally, I think it's good to reach out first to those therapists or doctors or providers who do have MS experience.
Our next question comes from Judy. Go ahead, Judy.
Hi. I'm currently in an outpatient center being treated for depression. I have MS, and it's at my local university here in Southern California. What can I tell my doctor about my unique situation so that I can assist her in my treatment plan?
Yeah, Judy, and I think you said you are seeing someone who's an MS specialist. I think that, first of all, I think there's some really good information available, and Piper will be making available to you after the phone call via either email or mail some resources on depression and treatment of depression in people with MS. So I would encourage you to advocate for yourself, you know, maybe tell your provider that it's known that people with depression and MS are often undertreated, and that it might be really important to share those resources with your provider. So, for example, there is a lecture listed on your resource list that you'll be getting that's all about kind of the latest findings about treatment of depression and MS. So I guess I'd really encourage you to advocate for yourself, maybe to share some resources or information with your provider, and to be persistent. If they start you on a medication or have you trial something, if you're not finding relief, I would really encourage you to keep asking for more help until you get to the place where you do feel better, because we do know that depression is treatable. If untreated, it often doesn't go away on its own in people with MS, but we do know that with proper care, you know, people typically get better. Their depression typically gets a lot better with the right treatment. Any other questions?
Our next question comes from Debbie. Go ahead, Debbie.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor, very much for your time as well. And I had a question. You had mentioned the cognitive behavioral therapy, and I just had a question. I'm going to a psychologist currently, and in our discussion today, we had spoke a little bit about radical acceptance, I guess the basic principles of accepting life, the radical acceptance, and the which is the skill part, I guess, and the willfulness and the willingness. Is that similar to the cognitive behavioral therapy, or is it?
Yeah, I think what you're describing, Debbie, is some components of what is called acceptance and commitment therapy, and that is very similar to or related to cognitive behavioral therapy. And by the term acceptance, it doesn't mean that you accept, that you have to say, oh, I'm glad I have MS, or I accept that this, but it rather has to do with kind of working within the MS in a way so that you feel better, so that you're not fighting it. Other types of cognitive behavioral therapy often involve doing behaviors that help you feel better, and learning to look at how you think about things and trying to increase the number of helpful thoughts and helpful beliefs and trying to decrease unhelpful thoughts and beliefs. And in one study published in 2005, David Moore and colleagues did a study of cognitive behavioral therapy for depression and MS, and it actually performed better than an antidepressant in terms of the number of people who got better. I think it was something like 60% of the people who got the cognitive behavioral therapy got better to the point where their depression was gone. And then I think it was 30% got better on the medication that they tried. So I'd encourage you, if you want to learn more about cognitive behavioral therapy, there's some information in the resources we're sending you. And I'll be talking about some aspects of it as well tonight. So I think with that, I'm going to move on now to the next thing I want to talk about. And I really want to now focus the rest of my time on strategies. And the strategies that I'm going to talk about are strategies that are not only useful for depression, they're also strategies that have been shown to be very helpful for managing other emotional and physical aspects of MS. They're helpful for reducing anxiety. They're helpful for managing stress. And many of these are also very helpful for managing pain and fatigue. And the first one I want to talk about is engagement. And by engagement, what I'm talking about is being an active participant in your life. Now, I think probably many people know that MS sometimes can really get in the way of doing what you want to do or enjoying what you want to enjoy. Maybe not for everybody, but certainly I hear that a lot from the people I work with who have MS. And one of the ways that we know people can try to reclaim their life and to really improve their mood is to really try to engage in life despite the MS. And let me tell you a little bit about what I mean by engaged. By engaged, I'm talking about being involved, being occupied, and being really active in your life and doing the things that matter to you, even if it sometimes requires workarounds. We often encourage people to be engaged in activities and roles that are important to them despite their MS symptoms, and this does sometimes require modifying what they do, or it may require you to think a bit differently about how you want to do things. But nonetheless, we know that being engaged in life can be very helpful. Sometimes this is also called behavioral activation. It has to do with deliberately going out and trying to do things that bring you joy or pleasure or satisfaction or contentment. And we know that people who are active or engaged in life tend to have less stress. They tend to be able to solve challenges and difficulties. They tend to have stronger relationships. And we also know that it's good for your thinking, it's good for your memory and other cognitive skills if you really try to be engaged and active in life despite MS. We also know that people who are engaged and active in life tend to have less pain and fatigue, or not bothered at least as much by pain and fatigue. So we often encourage people to really take a close look at what are you doing, and are there things that you'd like to be doing, not things you should be doing like the laundry or you know, washing the car, but are there things you want to do that bring you joy, that bring you pleasure, that bring you some sense of fulfillment or accomplishment, and what can you do to start engaging in those? And at towards the very end, I'm going to talk about some strategies for actually becoming more engaged. So I'm not going to go into a lot of details about that at this moment, but I just want to point out that a very common way for treating depression and for treating pain is to help people start to take back activities, or if you're already doing a fair amount, to look at are there ways to build in even a few more things that really promote satisfaction and well-being in your life. Now, an important way of getting active is exercise. And I just recently got back from a conference where somebody who's doing a lot of very important research looking at how exercise affects the brain and how it affects people with MS. And it's very exciting what I'm going to share with you tonight. But let me first just talk a little bit about why we encourage people to exercise as a way to build wellness and build mood. Well, research has shown that people who are physically more active are less likely to be depressed. They're also at less risk for developing depression in the future. And we know that when people are depressed, if you start them with exercise, use exercise as a form of treatment for depression, we know that it actually helps people recover from depression. And we know that both aerobic exercises, things that get your heart rate up, as well as other non-aerobic exercises such as strength building or training, both of those seem to have antidepressant effects. We also know that in addition to exercise being helpful to people in terms of mood, we know it has other benefits to people with MS. Research has shown that with people with MS, if you do endurance or strength training, it can really improve your ability to function both physically as well as in other important roles. We know that people who exercise can reduce their disability and reduce some of the negative effects of their MS. And research has also shown that people who exercise and have MS, it actually can reduce your fatigue and your pain. So exercise is really an important part of MS. It used to be not so long ago that we would tell people to try not to exercise too much. There was concerns that it would fatigue people or cause, you know, pain. But now we know that actually exercise is one of the very best things you can do for you, not only for your mind, but also for your body. what was really exciting to me this when I was at this conference this last weekend is they're showing that exercise can actually also improve your cognitive skills or your thinking skills. And that they think that it actually has positive effects in the brain in terms of kind of generating new cell or generating cell health in different areas of the brain, including areas that are involved with memory. So I think there's just some really exciting research going on right now in the area of exercise and MS, and I think it holds a lot of promise for people who have MS to exercise. I know that we did one study, a colleague of mine, Chuck Bombardier, did a study a few years ago looking at teaching people to gradually start exercising in the context of MS, and he had an exercise counselor who would call people and just help them set very concrete, specific goals and very gradually build up their exercise. And the people who were able to do that actually had improvements in their mood. So they went from being depressed. Many of them went from being depressed to non-depressed, but also reported other benefits, including improved energy, decreased fatigue, and decreased pain. So we're very excited about the potential for exercise, but we also know that there's lots of challenges to exercising when you have MS. So I'd just like to give you a few tips about that, and then we'll take our next question and answer in just a moment. So now, how do you exercise when you have MS? You know, first of all, I want you to remember there are many ways to go about exercise. You know, so far the research suggests that both aerobic and anaerobic exercise can be helpful to you. We also know that increasing just your everyday activities, you know, parking a little bit further away from the store or, you know, doing more activities with your upper limbs if you're pretty limited in your lower limbs. I mean, just lots of things, household activities, gardening, et cetera, can be useful to you. There's also a number of resources out there, and we've included some of them in your resource list. In fact, there's a very nice set of articles or information at the National MS Society's website, which we listed in your resource list, that really talks about how to start exercising an exercise program when you have MS and what to take into account and how to do that. It's important if you want to increase your exercise level or increase your activity to really try to identify what you enjoy. You know, don't pick an exercise just because you think you should do it. So, you know, for example, I had one person I was working with who just hated bicycling, but they thought that they should bicycle because they had one in their basement, and so it was pretty easy for them to get to it. But they just really disliked it, and so she decided eventually that she wasn't going to exercise on the bike, but instead decided she was going to go for walks because that was something she enjoyed. Also, think about what factors might help you maintain your exercise. Are you someone who might be more likely to do it if you do it with a friend, or do you find that you like to be alone? Would joining the gym be helpful, or getting an exercise DVD? Just think about what would help you to start and maintain an exercise program. It's very important to start gradually and to build up gradually. And often what we see people do is that they try to do too much too soon or do too much when they're feeling good and then they pay for it later. So it's especially important when you have MS to start off very slowly, very gently, and gradually work up your exercise. And it's pretty normal to have an increase in pain or fatigue when you first get started with an exercise program, but we encourage you to stick with it because the research suggests, and my experience in working with people suggests, that if you keep with it, you will start to see benefits in terms of your fatigue and your pain and your mood. Finally, it's very important for you to talk to your doctor or your healthcare provider if you're not currently exercising or want to change your exercise program. So even though there's a lot of great resources out there, I'd encourage you to first talk with your provider who can help you kind of design what would make sense for you. I also want to point out there's lots of helpful web-based programs. There's iPhone applications. In some communities, there's different kinds of swimming and yoga that people with MS can find helpful. So, you know, look around what's there, think about what you like to do, and talk with your provider. And with that, I think it's time for our next Q&A.
If you would like to ask a question, press the number 1 on your touch-tone keypad. Our next question comes from Laura Laura, go ahead.
Hi. I'm kind of curious about, I wouldn't call it depression, I would call it frustration, where you're trying to do something that's pretty simple that everybody in the world can do, but for you at that particular moment, it's not simple, like maybe taking the lid off of a can or something like that. And the frustration that goes with having to ask someone for help to do something that no one in the world has to ask anyone else to do. And so it's more like a momentary thing. And, I mean, even if you realize I shouldn't be getting frustrated, I mean, what are some, you know, this is like a, you can't really call it depression, but what are some ways to get past that? And I'm kind of not as bad off as a lot of people with MS, so I'm maybe in a earlier stage of frustration, but it's very hard to ask for help when you've never had to ask for it before, and then people look at you like you're crazy because nobody usually thinks about having fingers and toes and things like that. You know, they just go about their day. I don't know if you can find a question in there.
Yeah, no, Laura, it makes a lot of sense what you're asking, and I hear that a lot from people that, you know, not everybody certainly with MS deals with full-blown depression or even depression, but nonetheless, some of the challenges that MS can bring with it can still cause momentary times of frustration or irritation or anger or, you know, sadness, and it's very, first I want to tell you, Laura, that it's very normal to feel that way. And not to be hard on yourself for feeling that way. Couple things that might help that come to mind. In a few moments, we'll be talking about relaxation. And I'll tell you more, I'll come back to this when we talk about relaxation, but sometimes you can use kind of a relaxation exercise, just really a couple seconds exercise to kind of help calm yourself down when you're feeling frustrated. Another thing you can do is kind of stop and pay attention to, you know, what thoughts are running through your head. Are they helpful thoughts? Are they thoughts that might just make the frustration worse? You know, so, and what you might want to do is think about if they're thoughts that aren't very helpful, things like, you know, this is terrible, I feel bad that I can't do this, but yet I have it better than other people. You know, if those thoughts just make you feel more frustrated or upset, you know, maybe try to replace those thoughts with thoughts that might be more reassuring or more helpful to you, like, you know, I can't do this, but there are many things I can do, or this is frustrating, but it will pass. You know, I can get through this. That's kind of when I was talking about cognitive behavioral therapy earlier, that's kind of the cognitive part, you know, looking at how your thoughts are, and it doesn't mean your thoughts are wrong or right, but just sometimes we have thoughts as human beings that are helpful to us, and sometimes we have thoughts that aren't so helpful to us, and they just make our emotions stronger and bigger. The other thing I'd recommend is that, you know, if you don't already talk with other people who have MS, especially maybe people who are at a similar kind of place as you, you might find it helpful to do that. Because I think what you would find is that you're not alone in these feelings and this frustration. And again, it's important not to beat yourself up for it, but just kind of try to deal with it. And sometimes talking to other people, you'll learn how they've dealt with that in the past. So, next question.
Our next question comes from Mark. Mark, go ahead.
I wanted to know if you could speak to what you see are the benefits of neuropsychological testing. And how does a practitioner who administers this testing, how are they able to tease out the parts of the results of the testing that are, like, related to MS versus related to the depression? Because I tend to get lesions in the part of my brain where my emotions are.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted you to – I don't know if you wanted to talk more specific or more general about, like – what is the value of the results of a neuropsych testing? Like, I certainly understand why it's generally given for normal depressed patients, but how is it of particular value for those of us who have MS? And how often do you recommend, like, do you just get this once, or should it be updated in the future if you have cognitive changes, and any recommendations you have, and just speak to that.
Sure.
Do you understand my question?
I do, I do. And I actually do neuropsychological evaluations on a regular basis as part of my job at where I work, the hospital I work. So I think what I'll do is try to answer kind of a few parts of it, but I actually think it might be a great topic for future teleconferences to talk about neuropsychological assessment and cognitive functioning. And there may have been one on that before, but if not, it's a great topic. Certainly, I think, first of all, I'd say if you're getting a neuropsychological evaluation, and what that mean, we mean by that is that testing of that formal testing where you your memory, your concentration, your problem-solving, executive functioning, and other kinds of thinking skills are tested. Often also there's an assessment of your mood, looking for things like depression. That is one thing that I highly recommend you have it done by somebody who understands MS. In my experience, when people who do neuropsychological evaluations but not on people with MS, what I often find is that they sometimes don't understand the fluctuations that MS can bring, and they just don't understand it as well as I think they could. Now, it's hard to kind of explain how we, in a short amount of time, how we discern what's depression from what's underlying cognitive problems, but certainly there are ways that we can look at that based on these tests being given to thousands and thousands of people with MS and without MS. And so a good, well-trained neuropsychologist familiar with MS can help tease apart how much might be MS and how much might be more of a mood condition. The good news is that we know that if people are depressed and their depression is treated, you often see that their thinking skills get better. So memory gets better, concentration gets better, speed of processing can get better. So I hope I answered at least a few of your questions, Mark. And I think your topic, your questions are good ones. I just don't think we have time to go into all the details tonight. So are there any other questions or should I move on?
Our next question comes from Sue. Sue, go ahead.
I understand that lady saying it's frustrating how it takes us 50 moves to do something when it only takes other people, you know, like one. And I was also going to say I really like the exercise thing. I think physical therapy is a great way to start. Just go to a physical therapist, and they usually know what to start you with for multiple sclerosis, how to give you some different exercises to do to keep your limbs limber, and get you moving along. Works out just fine. And it is a good tension releaser, and it gives you more energy, lets you move around a lot more. I guess
great.
That's it.
Thank you, Sue. I think you really pointed out some of the benefits to exercise, and I absolutely agree with you. I think that perhaps, you know, if you can access a good physical therapist who knows about MS, I think that's a great way to start an exercise program. So with that, I think I'm going to move on now to kind of my next bit of information I'd like to give to you, and that has to do with relaxation. And I don't know how many of you have ever tried to deliberately relax, but relaxation is a type of skill that you can learn that can often help with when you're feeling stressed or depressed or in pain. Now, we all know how stress takes a toll on our body and also on our minds by leaving us physically tense or tired or worn out or cranky or irritable. And relaxation is actually our body's kind of opposite response to stress. And it's actually a true physiological state of rest and restoration. And we have, just as part of our nervous system gets us all prepared to deal with stress, the fight or flight response, there's also a part of our nervous system that has the opposite reaction, which brings our bodies back into sync, which relaxes us and helps us to kind of calm down. I don't know how many of you have tried practicing relaxation exercises, but by that, what I'm talking about are really a whole variety of different ways to try to elicit this physiological state of rest and relaxation. And I'll talk a little bit about some of those techniques in a moment, but What we know is that practicing relaxation can have a beneficial effect in many ways. People who learn how to relax can decrease their heart rate, their blood pressure. It's often used, in fact, to treat people who have hypertension, or it can be used for it. It's a common component of pain treatment programs to teach people to relax because it decreases muscle tension and spasm. It decreases the circulation of the hormones in our body, the stress hormones that cause us to feel awful when we're stressed. It also can calm down your mind, and it can help improve sleep. So there's really a lot of benefits to practicing relaxation. And when I'm talking about practicing relaxation, I'm not talking so much about, you know, just doing something pleasurable to relax, although that's certainly beneficial too. But what I'm talking about is actually trying to elicit a relaxation response through things like different types of exercises. Now, tonight I don't have time to actually go into a bunch of these techniques, these relaxation techniques or exercises, but on the resource sheet that I sent you, I've listed, I think it's three different websites where you can go to actually download free relaxation exercises of varying lengths and styles. And all of them come from university-based centers, and so they shouldn't have any viruses or anything like them. So you could either put them, if you have an iPod, you could put them on your iPod, or because they're the MP3 files, or you could have them burned to your to a CD. Also at those sites, there's also places where they tell you how you can order ones if you want to actually order a CD of some relaxation exercises. Now, let me just give you a flavor for what relaxation is about. And one of the most common types of relaxation is what we call diaphragmatic breathing or intentional breathing. And really what you do is simply try to tune into your breath, focus your mind on your breath, and just try to slow the pace of your breathing, which has been shown to trigger that relaxation response. And it's really one of the most effective skills in relaxation. And kind of simply what you do is if you wanted to practice this a little bit later after a phone call, you would just try to get as comfortable as you can, sitting or lying down. And then you would want to breathe in deeply and slowly, and then kind of hold it for a count of like three or four, and then breathe out deeply or slowly, exhaling for about a count of three or four. And so really it's just trying to intentionally slow down the pace of your breathing. And a really important part of it is to focus on not only the breathing in, but actually the breathing out, because it's really the breathing out that relaxes you the most. So what this might look like if you were to put this into practice, this type of intentional breathing, would be to simply, you know, set aside some time, do some of these deep breathing exercises, and I think what you would find is that you'd start to notice that you feel more relaxed. And what we know is that oftentimes you have to practice this skill to get good at it, just like many things in life. So what I often encourage people to do is to try to do some relaxation for 15 to 20 minutes a day, every day, almost like if you're setting aside time to exercise, set aside time to relax. Now, I know that's not realistic for a lot of people, so even if you can only do it for 5 minutes a day, I would encourage you to practice it on a daily basis. Now, there are many different types of relaxation. The breathing is just one type. There are also different forms of relaxation where you imagine some peaceful sceneries and use some breathing to calm yourself down. There's different types of relaxation where you actually tense and relax muscles called progressive muscle relaxation. All of these different types of techniques are accessible to you in the resources that you'll be getting. So I really encourage you to try out relaxation if it's something you haven't done. I just wanted to mention that just last year a study came out looking at a type of relaxation called mindfulness training. And it was a study where they had 150 people with MS, and they randomized them. So half got the relaxation training, and the other half just got usual care. And they had an eight-week program, so it did take them a while. They had to have one time a week they would meet for 8 weeks to learn this, what's called mindfulness training. But what they found is that the people who learned how to do the mindfulness training and the stress reduction, they found that those people actually had, first of all, they had a very high attendance rate. They liked going to these classes. And they showed that they actually had many of the people's depression went away, and their fatigue got better, and their mood got better. So it really seems that relaxation and other forms of kind of mind-body techniques can be really useful for promoting your health and for addressing, you know, frustrating emotions, things like that. Now, to go back for a moment to Laura's question about how would you, you know, what would you do if you're feeling frustrated in the moment? One way you might deal with that is if you had been practicing relaxation, then what you could do when you start to feel that frustration come up, you could take a kind of one deep intentional breath, and that oftentimes will kind of trigger this relaxation response. So that's, again, where practicing kind of sets, gives you the skill so that you can then implement it later when you need it. So I think with that, maybe we'll go to Q&A.
Our next question comes from Laura. Go ahead, Laura.
Hi.
Hello, Laura. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi. I'm sorry. I started talking before I realized I was on. I just based on what you just finished saying, I said I'll highly recommend singing. You know, I sing in a choir once a week, and I find that I feel best during the rehearsal and for 2 hours afterwards. It's amazing. My question, I think I will withdraw. I was just going to ask you if you knew anything about the sleep apnea being common in people with MS, but I'll withdraw that unless no one else has questions.
You're right, Laura. Singing actually is very helpful for people, and I think it probably some of the breathing that you do with singing kind of triggers some relaxation, but singing is also very pleasurable and very soothing to most people, and so it's really a great way to kind of nurture some positive feelings. So thank you for that suggestion. Are there other questions?
Our next question comes from Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
My question was about the mindfulness stress reduction centers based at the university hospitals, because there is one near me in UMass Memorial Worcester. They have a MS center there. And do you know, are any of these, would you recommend these programs for MS patients? And does the National MS Society ever... those who are categorically needy ever give grants for them, for people to attend? Because the one near me is only like $450, but I'm on,
wow.
I'm not working, and it's not covered by insurance, and I'm on MassHealth because of the MS. But it would really be beneficial for me because I do have major depression. So I just want to know what your thoughts about this. Is it worth the money? And if I couldn't attend this course, if I was going to buy one book on this topic, which would it be if you had to recommend one?
Yeah. First of all, I absolutely recommend the mindfulness-based stress reduction courses, especially if they're the certified ones like you're talking about.
Yeah.
I really think they can be beneficial. Many of the things I'm talking about tonight are part of those kinds of programs. I don't know about whether or not your local MS chapter or the national would pay for that. That's a question I'm not sure of. But I would encourage you to go online and see, because there are some online treatments that are free of charge. In fact, I have one listed in our thing. It's not a mindfulness-based one, but it is a cognitive behavioral online free treatment program that you kind of do at your own pace. And I would not be surprised if there's not something out there with using the mindfulness-based stress reduction online. Or there might even be a study somewhere for it. So I would encourage you to Google that. I don't, off the top of my head, I don't have a book recommendation, but I would be happy. I have a couple ideas, and I'd be happy to, you know, send that along with Piper so that everybody can get that recommendation.
Thank you. That would be really, really helpful.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions?
Our next question comes from Carrie. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yes, I was just wondering how long does it take to really accept the disease on the overall, because it feels like I was diagnosed over 10 years now, and I have a really difficult time in accepting it. To really feel like you're not the same person, you know, mentally, you're not as strong as you were once, you know. So that's my daily battle.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, certainly I think everybody's kind of different in terms of when people, whether or not, first of all, people accept it. I mean, I think the word accept can mean so many things to different people. And some people tell me, you know, I've never accepted this, but I know I have it. I'm just going to keep dealing with it. And other people say that they get to a place where they feel like they're sort of maybe not glad they have it, but they're at peace with it. I've even had a few people tell me that they're glad they have it because it's taught them other things about life, and it's caused them to have other benefits. So, you know, unfortunately, I don't think I can tell you exactly, you know, what for you that might look like, Carrie. But I would encourage you, if you're still or if you're struggling with kind of how does this fit and how do you adjust to all the many changes that MS can bring, I'd encourage you looking to either get some help or connect with your local or with our MS chapter, or there's, you know, other ways to maybe get some support and some help and some strategies for trying to get to a place where you feel at least more at peace with what's going on and maybe feel like it's not getting in the way of your life quite so much. So I think with that, I don't know, let's see, I'm trying to decide, maybe I will go ahead and just kind of wrap up here by giving you some ideas on how to implement some of the ideas that we've discussed. You know, first of all, tonight I talked about how it's very normal to have a variety of emotions, and that, but that if you think you might be experiencing depression, a clinical depression or a major depression, I would really encourage you to try to get treatment. And if you're being treated and you're still feeling that way, I encourage you to talk with your provider about other avenues, because we know depression is treatable, but it typically doesn't get better on its own. And so I'd encourage you to keep trying, because there's many available treatments for that. We talked about the importance of staying active, and that can be staying active socially, that could be staying active by doing things you enjoy. It could be staying active by playing important roles, like being a parent or being a son or a daughter, or, you know, being part of an organization or working. We talked about the importance of exercise, and if nothing else, I hope you take home with you tonight, I'd really encourage you to look at whether or not you're exercising, and if not, look for ways to maybe increase or to adopt an exercise program. You know, my guess is that if I could ask you questions, I would find out that many of you or all of you have some things that you do already, some strengths, some ways that you manage your MS on a day-to-day basis that help you. And so I would encourage you, you know, to spend a few moments after tonight or after our call thinking about, you know, what am I already doing? What are my strengths already? What resources can I draw upon? It might be that you have friends or family. It might be that you have a good sense of humor. It might be that you're already exercising or you're doing other things that take care of yourself. You know, write these down, and the goal is really to keep building on them. Excuse me. Ask yourself, you know, am I engaged in life? And if you feel like you really have a pretty fulfilling life, that's fantastic. And if not, I would encourage you to take this as a time to say, you know, is there something I'd like to get back to doing or something new I've never tried that I'd like to try? And just think about, are there ways you can become more active and engaged in life? Because we know that's going to be beneficial to you, both your mind and your body. And ask yourself, am I exercising? Are there things I can do to be more physically active to benefit my health? And then lastly, what I did is you will be getting a goal-setting worksheet that in your resources, and I want you to take a look at that and think about maybe setting just one specific goal. We're often more likely to succeed if we start with just one small, very attainable goal. So on the worksheet, you can write down the goal, and you want to make sure your goal is very specific, very concrete, and very measurable. So it might be something like, I'm going to practice deep breathing relaxation for 5 minutes a day, 4 out of the next 7 days. Or I'm going to go for a walk for 10 minutes a day, 3 of the next 5 days. Whatever your goal might be, use that worksheet to kind of set some achievable goals. And if you come up with some barriers, try to generate some solutions to those barriers. One of the most important things in setting goals is only to set goals that you're 70% or more confident you can achieve. Or on a 0 to 10 scale, you're pretty sure that a 7 or higher, that you can meet your goal. If you don't feel that you're pretty confident you can meet your goal, it means it's probably not the right goal, and maybe you need to back off a step or two and set a more realistic goal. But I would encourage you to try to, you know, think about setting one goal for your wellness and well-being, and then kind of stick with it and see how it goes. And once that new skill or that new behavior becomes a habit, you can set another goal for yourself. A lot of good can come from even just achieving a goal. It can help you feel better. So I would encourage you to take a look at that goal setting and see if you can set some goals around some of the things we talked about tonight, if you feel like it would be helpful to you. So I guess in summary, I would just say that, you know, you all have probably many strengths and skills to draw upon already in managing your MS in your life. There's no one way to do things. What I have found in working with people with MS is there's many different ways to deal with depression. There's many different ways to deal with frustration, many different ways to deal with stress. But what's important is to really look at what's helpful to you and maybe try out some new things and to be flexible in your approach. There are many roads to wellness. There are many roads to feeling well. In the context of MS, and you just need to find what works for you. And I think that, you know, the long-term goal is really to, as much as you can, be living the life you want to live, maybe obviously with some adjustments, but doing more of what you want to be doing to have a fulfilling life. And if you do those things, if you try to set those goals, you're going to feel better. So, with that, again, I'll just point out that on your resource list, there will be a host of resources for you, including the relaxation tools I mentioned. There's something called Mood Gym, which is an online cognitive behavioral therapy for depression. It's not for MS, but I think it would still apply very well. There's lots of resources through the MS Society and others. So I encourage you to look that over when you get it from Piper. She'll either send it to you via email if she has your email address, or via mail if that's your preferred communication route. So with that, I'd like to thank you all for paying attention. I know it can be hard to pay attention for a full hour on the phone, so thank you for your attention, and good luck to you on whatever you try. I hope you find it was useful for you tonight. And I think with that, we'll conclude our conference call.